The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Academy's Guide to Success. The guide was designed to support students, parents, guardians, and teachers with navigating school life at Dalbrae Academy in Mabo. The celebratory launch took place at Dalbrae on January 16, 2015, during which students shared highlights from their personal involvement in the project and explained how it enhanced their media literacy, technology, and citizenship skills. Work was completed through the Tribes philosophy in the classroom. Tribes is a philosophy where students focused on the three principles of inclusion, influence, and community, as well as the four agreements: mutual respect, the right to pass, attentive listening, and appreciation.
Well, we're drawing to the end of the time allotted for member statements. Well, and they were most interesting today, but the time has expired, so we'll now move on to oral questions by members to ministers. The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Nova Scotians struggling with mental health issues rely on services provided by organizations in their communities. These organizations are the front lines of mental health service, Mr. Speaker. They include the Nova Scotia Division of the Canadian Mental Health Association, who had its funding cut by half this year and will be reduced to zero next year. Inevitably, Mr. Speaker, that will lead to less service in the community and a greater stress on our hospitals and general health care system. How can the Premier justify that cut, knowing the impact that it will have?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank all those in our province who help deliver services to Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, I also want to inform all members of this House that since taking power, we've added an additional $2 million to mental health services across this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that we aren't able to deal with the mental health issues that families across Nova Scotia face now. Wait times to access mental health services at the front lines are already too long. Data from the Department of Health already shows that for children with urgent and semi-urgent mental health issues, those that see a specialist within the national standards of wait time has dropped from 42%, which is already too low, to as low as 15% that get the help they need in the standard time, Mr. Speaker. Now the healthcare system will have to deal with even greater shortages because of cuts to the very service providers in our communities, like the Alzheimer's Society and the Canadian Mental Health Association. How does the Premier expect the healthcare system to make up for the loss of services for mental health services in communities that are provided by important organizations like these?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I want to thank all members of this province who help governments deliver services to the most vulnerable citizens of our province, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is the status quo is unacceptable. The leader of the Conservative Party has said himself we have some of the longest wait times in this province. Mr. Speaker, we've added an additional $2 million to ensure that when we deliver services to the most vulnerable citizens of this province, that those services are actually meeting directly to those Nova Scotians who require our assistance.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, of course we all thank people that work in the provision of mental health services for families and individuals who need help. Mr. Speaker, we want them to know that they're supported by their government instead of facing cuts at a time when we're already struggling as a government to provide services in communities across this province. In fact, the people that are dealing with mental health issues in their own family, they need to know that the service will be available to them by the provider close to them in their communities. They're the ones that are facing the cuts, Mr. Speaker. This is a false savings and a cruel one. Will the Premier reconsider the short-sighted cuts that the government has made and find the savings he needs in his budget somewhere else?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I again want to thank the Honourable Member and tell all members of this House there's an additional $2 million being provided for mental health services, Mr. Speaker. That is not a cut. That is not a reduction. That is an additional $2 million since this party's taken power.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, decades of Liberal and Conservative federal governments have put Atlantic Canada behind the eight ball. For years, the federal government has implemented stealth policies designed to fly under the radar, and they've gradually eroded our social fabric and our economic fabric. Yesterday, the tradition continued, Mr. Speaker, when the Harper government introduced another budget that really undercuts our region. But the only thing worse, Mr. Speaker, was our own Premier's reaction to that budget. So my question for the Premier is this. Does the Premier stand by his statement that to him there were few surprises and that there are only a few aspects missing from the Harper budget for our region?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to let her know that I don't put the federal budget together. I had an opportunity to look at it. What I said was we were grateful that there wasn't the kind of changes that happened when we moved for per capita funding, Mr. Speaker, when she was a member of the government who had to deal with that. We were disappointed, quite frankly, that we didn't see an opportunity to allow the immigration file to come to provinces and allow provinces to have greater say on the immigration file in their respective provinces. We also saw that there was a fund built in Western Canada, in Vancouver, that was really towards port development. We would like to have seen that. At the same time, Mr. Speaker, we've seen some issues around infrastructure, military spending. We were grateful to see that the ship project is still going forward, has been committed to. Grateful to see the military spending in and around stuff on land, Mr. Speaker. Those are signs as a part of this country and a region that has huge military spending, we can begin to benefit from.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier and I would agree on the absolute importance of the ships project. However, Mr. Speaker, successive federal governments have changed the cost funding structure for health care, social transfers. They've narrowed EI eligibility. They've encouraged out-migration of the population of our province. And yesterday, the Harper government introduced a budget that will continue those trends, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. Does the Premier really care about what effect these policies will have on our province, and what is he prepared to do to change the direction of the federal government's approach to our region?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, I do want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to remind her, Mr. Speaker, we've had a positive growth development in this province. Our population has increased, Mr. Speaker. Since they've left power, our population has gone up. We've seen a growth in the manufacturing sector. Yesterday, Mr. Speaker, as part of the federal budget, we saw a capital write-down on the manufacturing sector. We think that's a positive thing. We're hoping that Michelin will see that as a good sign, continue to reinvest in this province. We're seeing what's happened in the manufacturing sector in rural Nova Scotia. Those are positive things. We see as part of that is a capital write-down at LNG, Bearhead and Goldboro. Mr. Speaker, these are all positive signs, positive projects. Those initiatives will help Nova Scotia capitalize on growing good jobs in this province and continue to move forward, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on our final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there are 10,000 fewer jobs in this province than when that government came into power, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Ivanhoe Commission talked about the need for the federal government to be a partner in terms of moving our province's agenda forward. And after the Harper government's budget yesterday, the Premier walked out to the media and he gave Prime Minister Harper a free pass, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Premier, when Nova Scotia and the Atlantic region are in desperate need of someone willing to fight for our region. Why is he satisfied with staying deadly quiet when our province is being ignored, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Maybe she missed the first answer, Mr. Speaker. We saw issues that were missing in that budget, Mr. Speaker, that we thought would have benefited this province and the region. We have actually led the country, Mr. Speaker, in harmonizing apprenticeship opportunities in the region, which will spread across the country. I was very honoured, Mr. Speaker, to represent. Very honoured to represent premiers as we're unifying the apprenticeship opportunities from one coast to the other, Mr. Speaker. Those are all positive signs. We're building a relationship with the national government that they ensure and understand where Nova Scotia fits and the role we can play, Mr. Speaker, in ensuring that the European free trade deal that they want to move forward on, we can capitalize on, Mr. Speaker. But unlike the leader of the Democratic Party, Mr. Speaker, we're just not going to go out and complain about everything under the sun simply because that's what she thinks her role is, Mr. Speaker. We believe there's a constructive way to move this federation forward.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can't help but say that I found the questions from the Leader of the NDP interesting, because we all know how the NDP dealt with budgets from Ottawa. When Ottawa lowered taxes like the HST for all Canadians, the NDP jacked them right back up here in the province of Nova Scotia. In that light, the budget, the national budget or the federal budget yesterday, Mr. Speaker, reduced the taxes on small businesses across the country. I'd like to ask our Premier if he will assure the small businesses of Nova Scotia that he won't jack their taxes back up like the NDP did with the HST.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Minister of Finance has tabled her budget, Mr. Speaker. There's been no change to small business tax in this province. Mr. Speaker, we continue to work with them to ensure that there's fairness in the taxation system in this province, and we're going to continue to do so.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I was hoping the Premier would say, no, they're not going to backfill the reduction in small business tax that's coming to all Canadian small businesses. In the same vein, Mr. Speaker, the budget from Ottawa yesterday included an increase in the threshold for the tax-free savings accounts, something that's used by 11 million Canadian families to save for all kinds of life events, Mr. Speaker. The Premier was quoted last night as saying, and I quote, that there will be an adjustment for us here in Nova Scotia on the tax side. I'll table that quote. Same question, the Premier. Will he assure the families of Nova Scotia that he will not claw back the tax break that they're getting from Ottawa with the tax-free savings accounts last night?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what the question asked me yesterday, what impact would this have on the financial revenue of the province coming from Ottawa? We, at that point, today, Mr. Speaker, are still working on that. We said there would be some adjustments that would affect the income that would come into our province. Mr. Speaker, we have not asked Nova Scotians to make up for changes that have happened at the national level, Mr. Speaker. What we've continued to do as part of the Federation is continue to ask Ottawa to work with this province to allow us to control our own destiny to move the province forward. Why we continue to hope they continue to lift the cap on immigration. We as a province know we can drive that better, Mr. Speaker. It's why we've continued to ask them not only, Mr. Speaker, to work with this province, with the private sector to allow them to prepare them for the export opportunities that we're seeing. And, Mr. Speaker, we as a province have begun to work with exporters, and we're seeing tremendous results from that. We just need the federal government to continue to be our partner.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Health Minister. Mr. Speaker, Nan McFadden wants her mother, who is in a long-term care facility in Truro, to be closer to her in Pictou. The McFaddens were aware of a person in Pictou who conversely wanted to move to Truro. The McFaddens have been working for months to arrange this swap, but the Department of Health says it's not allowed. Can the minister please explain why two people who are willing to simply trade places in long-term care facilities aren't allowed to do so?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, for the question. Just became aware of this case today, and I'm more than prepared to take a look at it as Minister. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, and I want to thank the Minister for that. Mr. Speaker, it's not a complicated issue. Two people, both in long-term care facilities, simply want to swap places. There's no cost associated with this. No wait list. Nobody on the wait list will be displaced, or no queue will be jumped, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the minister, how quickly will he be able to direct his department to allow families like the McFaddens to trade places in long-term care facilities?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member opposite for the question. This is not the first time, of course, this type of issue has come along to the department. It happens to be the first one since I became minister, but it is one that I actually brought to the floor as a health critic. So we will get on to looking at this issue as quickly as possible.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of DTIR. Mr. Speaker, in February, the Minister of ERDT said in a news release that the government would issue a request for proposals this year for the Yarmouth Ferry for the 2016 season, and I will table that. So far, we have not been provided with an update as to when the RFP is to be expected to be issued. There are concerns that if the RFP is delayed, there will not be enough time for a new operator to allow for the 2016 season to begin smoothly. My question for the Minister is this: when can we expect the request for proposal for the 2016 Yarmouth Ferry service to be issued?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I truly appreciate the question from the member opposite. Look, the reality is that we've committed to the Novastar vessel for this year. There have been a number of discussions and announcements made about what the RFP would look like and what the timeline would be for us, for myself, certainly for my department. We're engaged with those on the ground who are operating this service. We're also engaged with the larger community, those who have an understanding of this service and what it's going to take in the future to ensure sustainability. We're looking at the timelines. We're certainly aware what the timeline is for the RFP. We still haven't made a final determination, Mr. Speaker. I'm very engaged in this file. I'm aware of it. And when things come to update, I'll be happy to share it with the member and all Nova Scotians. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer. Many tourists and operators in the tour bus trade need to be able to make bookings 1 year in advance and need to know the ferry will be there. And many want to be able to book this summer for the summer of 2016. There have been some concerns that if there's any delay in this process, people will be unable to book early, as this was the case in the past, and I will table that delayed bookings. Can the minister tell us when the expected RFP closing date would be and when the decision will be made for the ferry for 2016?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, we're looking at the components of the ferry service, but I can assure the member opposite, that's a conversation I've had many times with my friend, the MLA for Yarmouth. The worst case scenario, the thing that we can't allow to happen is any discontinuance or disruption in service for 2016. That's an absolute non-starter for us, so that's part of the conversation. That's a big component of that. We have to have continuity. We're going to give that vessel the opportunity and that service to succeed. We know it will succeed, and with that, we have to have a continuous service. So that's a key piece for us, but we'll be sure to do everything we can to maintain that service and have stability, not only in 2015, but for many, many years to come. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. Bill 49 was passed through this House just 5 months ago, and that bill included a Liberal promise, now enshrined in legislation, to leave the film tax credit alone, leave it as is until 2021. So my question for the Minister is a simple one. Was the Minister mindful of this bill when the Liberals were deciding to gut the film tax credit?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member opposite. I think the important thing to remember again is that this is in place, that there is a film tax credit and a digital media tax credit. Both of them are in place until 2020. And as the members know in the House, there are discussions underway to look at the form that will be going forward. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you very much. And I guess the as-is part had little value, even though it was enshrined in legislation. So I'll redirect to the Minister of Business. My question for the Minister of Business is, Bill 49, passed just 5 months ago by this government, required Film and Creative Industries Nova Scotia to submit a strategic plan by March 1st, 2015. Now, unfortunately, the Film and Creative Industries Nova Scotia website has been taken down, so we're unable to see if this plan was there. So my question is, was this strategic plan, as required by the government's bill last November, actually submitted to the government, and if not, why not?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from my colleague. The film industry tax credit, as the minister has indicated, remains. The administration of the industry itself has been transferred to NSBI, and staff within NSBI presently are responding to the needs of that industry, and they will continue to do so.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is to the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, a few years ago, and a former government ago, some changes were made to the geographical areas that local Department of Transportation covered. I wonder, could the minister tell me today whether or not any assessment of that change has been done or data has been collected, where there actually have been some savings or efficiencies?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank the member for the question. That was done a number of years back. The member is correct. What the department and the government of the day looked at was to try to streamline services in areas that had overlapping and had dual coverage on some services like winter and summer maintenance and some of the brush cutting, those types of things that were happening, as well, of course, as capital projects and maintenance paving. What had happened was there were a number of jurisdictions that were pulled into this restructuring realignment. Some were successful and some weren't. Overall, it seemed to be a positive endeavour by the department, but certainly there were some challenges, and they're part of the ongoing discussions.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that response. And he is right. One of our areas has certainly been a challenge that has not worked very well, and I would just ask if the Minister would once again give it some consideration, because anyone in his department would know that this is not the first time that I've asked this question, and it probably does work well in some areas, but it is not working well in West Hants. So I would ask if some consideration could be given to some changes for us.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, when I had this discussion with the department, our Director of Operations, Barb Bailey, specifically mentioned some of the successful areas and some that have worked well, and she also pointed to Hants West in terms of some of the problems they had and the inefficiencies that resulted there from this change. So in identifying areas where the change wasn't so positive, that member opposite region was part of those that really had some concerns. So I can tell the member today that Barb and our staff are looking at changes, and that's one particular area where we're going to look hard and make real improvements. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the McNeill government's decision to shut down film and creative industries has had a massive ripple effect through the creative sector. And it's clear the government had no plan in place when they decided to lock the doors on this important agency. Yesterday, the Premier couldn't differentiate between the film tax credit and the important youth apprenticeship programs offered by Film and Creative Nova Scotia. And the shock people I talked to, how little knowledge the government seems to have about those that the cuts have affected. Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Premier if he could please explain why he eliminated Film and Creative Industries without any plan in place for the important programs it administered.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, I am very encouraged by the conversation that happened between government, Mr. Speaker, and Screen Nova Scotia on a go-forward basis. We will continue to work with them, Mr. Speaker, to find a solution that works for the entire sector. We're encouraged by the fact that members of the sector now are being able to reach out and getting contact information through NSBI, and that relationship seems to be beginning to build. Mr. Speaker, those are, while during the transition, there are, no matter what it is, there's always difficult challenges, but we're very pleased that in very short order, those things seem to be coming together.
I'm a leader of the New Democratic Party.
Very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, we all know that in closing down film and creative industries, the government laid off six of the nine staff who were there, and the Minister of Finance has indicated that one person moved to NSBI was a film person, one person was a music industry person, and one was an administrator. And the Minister for Business has said that in order to transition, he's had to hire three people. So my question now to the Premier is, can he explain why it made sense to lay off six experienced people from an agency with 30 years of expertise and replace them with three casual individuals?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank those Nova Scotians who worked on behalf of all Nova Scotians through government, Mr. Speaker. Thursday the 9th was a difficult day for a lot of Nova Scotians who worked for government who lost their employment, Mr. Speaker. We continue to move and transfer certain staff with inside of government. Others will apply for jobs with inside of government. Some have moved to NSBI, and Mr. Speaker, if there are vacancies in NSBI, I'm sure those Nova Scotians could apply for those as well. But the reality of it is, Mr. Speaker, this province cannot continue to do things the same way it has always done and expect to get a different result. We, Mr. Speaker, are broke. We need to continue to move this province forward and change direction, and we're very encouraged by the support we're receiving from Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Finance. The Canadian Film Capital Corporation has supported productions in Nova Scotia for over 15 years, representing more than 950 productions. On April 21st, the Minister of Finance and her deputy received correspondence from CFC, who were compelled to provide factual information regarding the Nova Scotia Film Tax Credit and the actual impacts of the changes imposed. And I will table this document. To remain competitive in a global landscape, the CFC cautioned that Nova Scotia must remain vigilant and ensure that the Nova Scotia Tax Credit is perceived as stable, reliable, and predictable by domestic and foreign producers alike. Has the letter been reviewed by the Minister of Finance and her deputy, and is it being given the weight it deserves as the discussions with the film industry continue?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. I'm sure the member opposite knows there's been many letters. We've been reading them, looking at them, studying them, understanding them. I had indicated earlier that we have certainly taken everything very seriously. And as I said today, the parties have been meeting. It's been collaborative, and we will meet again tomorrow.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for her answer. The Canadian Media Fund also wrote to the Premier, the Minister of Finance, her deputy, and others. Valerie Creighton, President and CEO, states that under the government's change credit, the Book of Negroes simply would not have been made. She is firm in saying, your contention that not all 122 million of Nova Scotia film and television production volume can be attributed to the FITC, as it included the value of funding from the Canada Media Fund, which would be made in the province without a tax credit in place, is absolutely incorrect. So my question is, with growing evidence from these experts, will this government act in good faith and restore a workable credit that the industry can actually use to generate investment and save jobs in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as the member opposite knows, we have been working in good faith. There's been a number of long and good meetings, but long and real working meetings to discuss and better understand the position of the industry, how we can go forward. I mentioned that in the first meeting, both parties had said, of course, we want to have an ongoing film industry here in Nova Scotia. We have a meeting of minds about that, and now it's working together to make that happen.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Well, the beat goes on, and we now know that the Liberals through Communications Nova Scotia have spent another $330,000 in taxpayer-funded research between July and February. Topics included gas regulation, the art gallery, perceptions about the now-defunct Economic Development Department, and fracking. More than $330,000 in 8 months. That's about 13 times the median after-tax earnings for an ordinary Nova Scotian. So my question is, how can the Premier justify spending $330,000 on polling while telling Nova Scotians to cut back?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the honourable member. I'm sure his research department that he has over there that seems to miss a few beats would recognize and I'm sure tell him that, Mr. Speaker, that's considerably lower than has happened in this province, Mr. Speaker. We have, but I think he and the members of his caucus who continually ask us to go out and talk to Nova Scotians think it would, should be important that we go out and consult Nova Scotians and ask them, what is he against? You against the art gallery? What are you against? Why are you afraid to let Nova Scotians have a say?
Order, please. I'd like to remind the honourable premier not to refer to members opposite directly, the honourable member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll redirect to the Minister of Finance. Of the $330,000 of taxpayer money the Liberal government spent on policy, almost $70,000 went towards the Minister of Finance's pre-budget tax review. And the only significant tax reform in a provincial budget was the government's decision to eliminate the film tax credit. So is gutting the film tax credit really all taxpayers receive for the minister's $70,000 spend?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As we probably all know, there was a complete adoption of the regulatory section of the tax review. That was looked at, that as well, the member opposite knows that 8 meetings were held around the province and that there was a lot of consultation. I've said further that there would be more talk on some of those issues, and we've talked about them here in estimates earlier this week.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Speaker, for the third day in a row at the Halifax Infirmary, surgeries have been cancelled due to contaminated surgical equipment from an unknown source. Yesterday, the public was supposed to receive a report on the results of the investigation. As of today, more than 200 operations have been postponed, creating surgical backlogs and adding to the massive wait list. In addition, Mr. Speaker, the event has worried Nova Scotians about the safety of medical equipment in our hospitals. So I'd like to ask the Minister, can the Minister provide the House and all Nova Scotians with an update on the status of the investigation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that question. It is always a concern to Nova Scotians when we have a disruption in the healthcare system, especially at the QE2 Science Centre. In this case here, they are elective surgeries. There's been no impact on urgent and emergency surgeries. This is a problem that has developed in a few other jurisdictions as well. We have experts in the province today to help figure out what it is with the wrap on surgical instruments that has some small debris on them. You know, the big story here should be, Mr. Speaker, that the now one provincial health care system meant that almost immediately we could place instruments for sterilization in 5 other hospitals across the province.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, I think the minister needs to check. Over 200 surgeries, I know some of them are urgent in nature, are being cancelled, and it's going to create a massive backlog. With the recent cuts of more than $7 million from hospital equipments, many Nova Scotians are concerned about the quality and safety of medical instruments. Although this event occurred at the Halifax Infirmary, it raises important questions about similar sterilization methods and medical equipment across Nova Scotia Health Authority. So, Mr. Speaker, can the minister detail what steps he has taken to ensure that all medical equipment across Nova Scotia is safe for use, even after a cut of $7 million to hospital equipment?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and we can give the member opposite and therefore all Nova Scotians the long answer during estimates. The short answer is simply that we were able to purchase more equipment in last year's budget and therefore needed less, considerably less, in the budget for 15-16.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Liberal government's decision to slash the Canadian Medical Protective Association rebate is forcing some rural doctors into early retirement and deterring any new recruits from practicing in the province. Since April 1st, 6 obstetricians and 2 locums have either relocated or resigned in rural Nova Scotia. In a media story, Dr. Don Westcott from Antigonish says he's truly exhausted and unable to get any help in any form of any other OBGYN. I'll table that as well. How does the minister expect Dr. Westcott and other doctors like him to continue practicing when the government seems to be going out of its way to ensure that no OBGYNs will come to practice in rural Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and that is a concern that has developed over the last number of months. We are currently paying 80% of the CMPA fees. It has been at 90%. We are in negotiations, and we'll see where the level of compensation on CMPA fees will be decided. We know that for part-time specialists, when your fees jump by over 100%, it does indeed have an impact.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Out of the five graduating obstetric students at Dalhousie University in Halifax, none of them have plans to practice in Nova Scotia. Dr. Westcott's practice has been understaffed for the last 8 months, and recruitment efforts have been futile. My question to the Minister of Health is, what does the Minister say to women in rural Nova Scotia who are worried that obstetrical services won't be there for them when they need it?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What we do know is that we have over 40 specialists, obstetrician gynecologists in the province. We know that retirements occur each and every year. The physician resource plan is indeed looking after most of those positions that will need to be filled on an annual basis. And I'm sure that as negotiations go along, we will reach the right compensation around fees. There is a much bigger problem with CMPA, and in fact, all provinces are currently looking at that.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of TIR. As the Minister knows, the rates for a yearly pass for the Englishtown Ferry have gone up, a drastic increase. As the Minister also knows, the ferry has been out of service on numerous occasions over the last 6 months. Many local residents and businesses have these annual passes, but the service is unreliable. And Mr. Speaker, in an answer earlier in the House today, the Minister talked about how, with the Yarmouth Ferry, continuous service is so important, and it is the same with this ferry, although we know it is a cable ferry. So my question to the Minister is quite simple. Will there be anything done to prorate or offset the costs of the annual pass for local residents and businesses who are using this pass but can't use it on a continuous basis because of the unreliability of the ferry?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, in response to the member's question, I know he thinks I'm an incredible minister, but I can't control the flow of the ice in the Atlantic Ocean, Mr. Speaker. In all seriousness, look, it is a considerable issue. The ice flows are something that we deal with, and it's been a frustration with respect to Englishtown. The member for Victoria of the Lakes has brought this to the House and to my department many times. The reality is that it is a reasonable point, and I think that with these discussions about fees and with service, there is ongoing discussions with the community, and I think that, look, we're open to listening to that. If there is a defined and a definitive number of times that it's out, we can look at something like that. All the options are on the table. We've been down the road in terms of the increases and why they were necessary, but, Mr. Speaker, we're going to be fair and reasonable with the people of Englishtown and all Nova Scotians that are impacted by this.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I really want to thank the Minister for that reply, and I think he is an incredible minister, and when he paves the new Boston Road, he'll be a fantastic minister. Mr. Speaker, the government has jacked up the cost on these families. So, and the minister has said he's willing to look at something reasonable to help those families, and again, I want to thank him for that. So my question is, will the minister take time out of his busy schedule to sit down and talk to the residents and determine a way to make this happen?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, the member from Victoria of the Lakes, I know that the member opposite and many in the Cape Breton, on Cape Breton Island are discussing with stakeholders, with people in the community about what happens moving forward. I feel very comfortable that I'm getting the information and an understanding of what's happening there on the ground. The warden councillors have been reaching out to my department and to me directly. So we're listening, Mr. Speaker. We're happy to look at what range of options will be on the table. Again, we fully appreciate and are sympathetic to the fact that the ice does disrupt the service. So we'll certainly do our very best. Thank you very much.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, 170 people showed up to a meeting in Whitney Pier last evening. They're concerned the Minister's Health plan to open home care to a competitive bidding process will result in the exact same problems we've seen in Ontario and British Columbia. There, home care workers lost their jobs, service declined as an international big box for-profit home care company paying lower wages trimmed their budgets to boost profits at the detriment of their clients. So I'd like to ask the Minister, what will the Minister of Health say to Cape Breton home care workers and the province's home care workers who are worried that they may lose their job as a result of putting this out to a competitive bidding, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to address that issue. Just like the great fear-mongering when we restructured the healthcare system, the same tone and the same issue is now coming back around. We found a Nova Scotia solution to restructuring healthcare. We'll find a Nova Scotia solution for home care as well.
The Honourable House Leader for the NDP Party.
Mr. Speaker, nurses being flown in because nurses quit and retired. If that's fear-mongering, Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the minister is thinking. Mr. Speaker, last night in Whitney Pier, Karen Kennedy, maybe she's fear-mongering, I don't know, said simply, I don't know what I'd do without them. Karen is a dialysis patient who receives services in Sydney. She was talking about her home care worker. I simply don't know what I would do without them. I don't think that's fear-mongering, Mr. Speaker. I wonder if the minister, what does the Minister of Health have to say to people like Karen who are concerned about losing the home care workers who they have known for years as they deal with their health care issues?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to say that all the RNs, the LPNs, the CNAs that provide home care in the province after the restructuring will all be employed. We'll be much more efficient in service delivery, and I believe as well those wait lists will be reduced. And as far as flying nurses in, if we didn't have the antiquated system of defining a workplace by the union you were in, we would have had no problems whatsoever.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you much, Mr. Speaker. And my question through you is also to the Minister of Health and Wellness. My question is to the Minister of Health and Wellness, Mr. Speaker. As has been mentioned, there was a meeting in Sydney last night with 170 people in attendance to talk about the quality and the service that people require and get for home care. It has been said that there is indeed going to be a guaranteed price put on the RFP as to what the cost is going to be paid out. The question is not about what is going to be paid out. The question is, in the RFP, will there be guaranteed standards of service that the home care receivers are now getting so that they can be assured that the quality of care they're getting now will remain the same regardless who the delivery persons are?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much for the question, and a very, very good question. What we do know is we have to change the way we do business in Nova Scotia around home care. Last year's budget, we put $30 million in just for home care, and that simply, you know, was into the system and used almost immediately. We have to change that the way then in which we structure our home care. What we do know is that those who will provide the care will be well compensated, and we will have all those who are currently working in jobs providing home care in the province.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is very important to the people that receive home care, especially in rural Nova Scotia, that the standard of care which they've become accustomed to stays in place, that they get the quality of service that they need to stay in their home. So, Mr. Speaker, it's nice that the minister has said that they're going to be paying a good salary, and that's important, and that they've invested more money. But the question is, can he guarantee the quality of service that a client will get will remain as quality as it is now when this change, if this change takes place?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I can tell the Honourable Member is that currently there are, we do have good home care, there is no question. However, there is absolutely, there isn't the criteria and the accountability that it actually will be built in to the new contracts that will be delivered. It's going to be better. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is also to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, over the last year or so, there's been lots of closures and lots of talk about emergency rooms and labs in Cape Breton, especially on the north side. In an article after his visit to the north side in early December, the minister said there will be a full clinical review across the province. But in the short term, he expects the issues surrounding the emergency room, lab, and point of care to be settled early in the new year. We're now well into the new year, and there's been nothing settled with respect to lab services or emergency closures. So my question to the minister is, can the minister give the residents and staff of the Northside General and Cape Breton Emergency Rooms what the status is of this review?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. He started asking it a couple of days ago. We'll finish it off today. A couple of things have happened. Yes, there will be that provincial clinical review of what services where they take place. That is currently underway. When the new provincial health authority got underway on April 1st. In the short term, we know that two of the doctors at the north side are heading up a community health centre project. Another doctor has opened a walk-in clinic, and people are discovering that you can actually do real good medicine outside of a hospital.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the closures of the emergency room, especially on the north side, are wearing on our community. The longer we wait for a solution, the more anxious the people are becoming. So my question to the minister is, can the minister give us an update on what the plan is for the Northside General and when we can see that plan implemented?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We know that some form of a community health centre, a CEC, some modelling of that, and we've had Dr. Ross in to take a look. Also, we need to consult with the physicians, the 16 physicians that work out of Northside. Many of them now, a good number of them, are nearing retirement age, slowing their practices down. They do not want to work the emergency room overnight. We have to put another model in place, and we're hoping by summer we will have something very definite for the future of Northside.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, we're learning today of a very disturbing story out of the Strait area in the Herald. A Port Hawkesbury woman who works in the Department of Justice reported a sexual assault to her supervisor in 2008. And according to this victim, that complaint was never reported to the higher-ups in the Department of Justice, but it was reported to the accused. For the next 4.5 years, the victim had to continue to work with the man she had accused, as the assault was never reported, and it's in the courts. Now, Mr. Speaker, I recognize I cannot ask a question about a matter that's in front of the courts. My question is not about the court case. My question is, what procedures are in place in the minister's department to ensure that complaints of sexual assault are properly investigated?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank my colleague for that very important question. Sexual assault anywhere is unacceptable. There's no doubt about that, including in all our correctional facilities. And she's quite right. I'm unable to speak to any of the specifics of that situation because it is in our court system. As I answered yesterday, actually I had my estimates yesterday, and I spoke at length about the various things that we have available for our staff in our correctional facilities. And if you want to give me a second question, I'll be able to answer that for you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, according to the Avalon Sexual Assault Centre, 88% of all sexual assaults go unreported. 84% of those that are reported are made by women. And many women don't report because they believe their complaint won't be taken seriously, and they're afraid to suffer even more humiliation. Mr. Speaker, I think we're all very concerned when cases like this inform us that systems have broken down, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the minister if there will be an internal investigation as to what occurred in the Department of Justice if a system indeed did break down.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for that question. And yes, of course, we always undertake internal investigations anytime there is any issues arising, whether it's between staff, between offenders and staff, offender. So yes, we definitely will. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, during the fall session, a colleague to my left there was very concerned about lack of firewood and Green Shelburne. And I wanted to know if the Minister could possibly give us an update on the firewood, the availability of firewood, and if that's a possibility that particular issue might be arranged to satisfy my colleague to the left.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, the issue surround shortage of firewood in certain areas in the province last year was a result of contracting capacity because of a contraction in the marketplace. That said, our Department of Natural Resources reached out to our private partners in the industry, and because of that work, we actually increased the flow of hardwood into the fireplace market by threefold, Mr. Speaker. We also...
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to opposition business. The House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Can you call private members public bills for second reading?
We'll now call private members and public bills for second reading.
Can you call Bill number 96, Revenue Act?
Bill number 96, the Revenue Act and Mining Fuel Exempt. The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to rise today to speak to this bill, a piece of legislation that our party has introduced several times. Mr. Speaker, members of all parties will be familiar with the substance of this bill. It has been a long-standing request of the mining industry in Nova Scotia. Mining is the largest private sector employer of Aboriginal peoples in Canada on a probational basis.